to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. 60% of Americans believe children do better when their mothers raise them at home. 70% of American mothers with children under age 18, however, are working mothers. Are those children really better off when their mothers don't work? My guest today, Pamela Linehan, studied families with working and non-working mothers and came up with some answers. And I'm talking with her today with Pamela Linehan about what grown children of working mothers want you to know. So please post your comments and questions on our blogs, which can be found on emotionalpro.com and on blogtalkradio.com/FPL. And when you can also talk directly to Pam Linehan and me on our toll-free number, which is 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. And when you want to share Pamela's message, you can come back to the Emotional Pro site and check in with the archives. And remember, we also offer subscription to Full Power Living on iTunes. Well, Pamela Linehan was one of the first female partners on Wall Street, a former C-suite executive of an NYSE, New York Stock Exchange company, and a high-tech startup. She combined a climb to the vanguard of business leadership with a passionate dedication to raising her own children. She's an avid believer in the power of women to lead as well as parent and serves on the boards of three publicly traded firms. And she's also the author of What You Don't Know and Your Boss Won't Tell You, Advice from Senior Female Executives on What You Need to Succeed. Today, we're discussing her subsequent book, My Mother, My Mentor, What Grown Children of Working Mothers Want You to Know. So, Pamela Linehan, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you for having me.
It's a delight. Well, I've lived as a single, married, step, and adoptive mother, and I worked outside the home through it all. And so I was really interested in reading what you've had to say in My Mother, My Mentor, because in my experience, as a mother, it's difficult not to be concerned about whether you're doing a good job, no matter what kind of mothering you're doing in addition to working. And so I'm curious about what drew you to exploring this this particular topic.
Well, I know that I always worked, and a lot of my friends did too, and our children turned out well, and yet we heard those statistics you started out with, that more than half of Americans think that children would be better off with one parent stayed at home. So, and every time I would go to a networking event, the younger mothers would ask me how I managed my work and family responsibilities. And so started looking around for information to give them, and there really wasn't any. So therefore, what I was doing was doing the did some work on my own to interview people. And as I think you mentioned, I interviewed nearly 70 working mothers and their grown children, and then an online survey of more than 1,000 adults aged 23 to 44 to compare the childhoods of people whose mothers worked with people whose mothers didn't.
Uh-huh. So that's a lot of people that you looked at. And you say that the issue for working mothers isn't how their children will turn out, but whether they will turn out any differently if the mother works or if she stays home. And, you know, I was kind of surprised in reading your book. It looked to me like in almost every category, there really was very little difference.
There really is very little difference, and I think that children are very resilient and children adapt to their surroundings, and the key thing is to have children think that your work is normal, that if you feel terrible about it, you're going to make them feel terrible about it. But if it's just something that you get up and go to work and they get up and go to preschool or school, it's normal. It's part of their everyday life. So those children seem to be very comfortable with this type of arrangement because it's what they knew.
Right. You know, you bring to mind my second marriage, and I'd had a son who was about 2.5, 3 years old at the time the marriage ended. It fell apart, and I was going to work. Now, mind you, work for me, since I'm a self-employed psychotherapist, was in an office in the back of my own property. So I wasn't going far. But as I walked out my back door, my three-year-old son attached himself to my leg and begged me not to go to work. And I think you have a story like that in your book, too. And I was initially angry because, you know, his father wasn't there and I was having to take care of everything. And I started to be angry. And then I looked at this little three-year-old face and said, no, no, no. So I got down and I said to him, you know, the reality is that you got a mother who likes to work. And I'm probably going to work your whole life because I really like what I do. And he turned loose of my leg, gave me a kiss, and never mentioned it again.
Well, that's a wonderful way to explain it. The economic reality is most families need two incomes these days, and we might just as well accept it. And a lot of women work because they love working, and they feel that they would be better mothers if they had time away from the home. So when they are home, they can really be concentrating on their children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you were talking about how children are resilient. I once had friends who lived on a houseboat in Seattle, and they told me that when their daughters were small, lots of people were concerned that they didn't have enough opportunity to play out of doors. But they did, because their parents went to the trouble to take them to the park. So they got to play outside. And I realized when I was reading My Mother, My Mentor, that working mothers might have to make a little extra effort too, perhaps to carve out time to spend with their children. But their children still can get mommy time just like other children. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. And I think that what we forget is that children just love being with you regardless of what you're doing. And so when I ask children about their favorite memories, many children mention grocery shopping. And I know that I used to drive home from work and pick up my daughter and go back out to the grocery store, even though that might not be very efficient. And we would walk up and down the aisles, and she'd be in the cart, and I would talk to her about things that were on the shelves. And she swears that she learned how to read in the grocery store. So you really just want to take those errands that you're doing anyway and take your children with you, because to you, they may be things that are just something to check off your list, but to your children, they're great adventures and time to spend with you.
You know, I'm remembering yesterday I had a short conversation with a friend who has been caring for her grandchildren 1 to 3 days a week for about 3.5 years or so. And the child's mother and father both work. And my friend was feeling like her daughter wasn't paying enough attention to the child on a personalized basis, like we're talking about. And when she brought it up, her daughter said to her, "You were a stay-at-home mom your whole, through all your children, and I am a working mother, and you don't understand at all." Do you run into this? And what is it that a working mother may feel that a stay-at-home mother wouldn't understand?
Well, you know, statistics are that 70% of mothers with children under the age of 18 are in the workforce today, but in the 70s, that was only 47%. So that means, if you think about it, a lot of working mothers today had mothers who stayed at home, and they feel their mother doesn't necessarily understand. So I think that the working mother probably is just expressing her frustration. It's really, I think we need to be very careful not to criticize this generation of working mothers, because every family is different, and she's going to do what's right for her. So I have a daughter who's a working mother and a stepdaughter who's a working mother, and I'm very careful what I say to them about how they're raising their kids, because as my mother used to say, you never make the same mistakes as your parents, you make new mistakes.
A wise woman. But I do know that with some frequency, you remind your reader that just because a mother is a stay-at-home mother, she may not have significantly more time to spend with her children than a working mother. That means that all of us, all parents, have to prioritize.
Well, one statistic that really surprised me in the study is when asking children whether their mothers made the all events and then really important events, if you combine those two categories, so women who stay at home do make do have more ranking in the all events of school. But if you say you add in the really important ones, so you ask your children what's important, the working mothers did just as well. And I think what that says is that the working mothers know they can't be there for everything, but that they do ask their children what's important to you. Is it the school play? Is it a game you're in? Of course, the working mothers made just as many parent-teacher conferences. And I think that tells us that these women who stay at home are very busy. You know, you think about all the nonprofits out there, and there would be hard to run a lot of these nonprofits if it weren't for the volunteer efforts by all those wonderful women who've chosen a different path. So these women are busy. They may be taking classes, they may be volunteering, they may have elder care, they may be doing other issues, but they are not spending every minute with their child either.
So one of the messages from your book is that in actual fact, even though mothers might have been overly concerned about the impact of their working on their offspring, that children didn't give it a lot of thought, and it turned out that the mothers were doing some really great modeling. Can you talk about what you discovered about the modeling that working mothers do?
Sure. I mean, one thing that maybe should be obvious but wasn't obvious to me until I saw the numbers is that working mothers provide a very strong role model. One of the things is that they provide a strong work ethic to their children. And this was cited by 50% of the daughters of working mothers compared to only 32% of daughters whose mothers stayed at home. And the other thing is that they taught the children confidence. They wanted them to understand that they could do things when the mother wasn't there. And they taught them resilience at a much higher rate. The reason resilience, I think, is important is because the mother isn't always there to solve the problem. And so the not that all mothers don't do this, but working mothers were much more deliberate on teaching the kids these skills because they knew they wouldn't be there as often.
Well, that was certainly true for me as a single parent. I kept looking for, well, what can I teach this child to do on his or her own? Because I know I can't do it all. And so, you know, these days we have cell phones, but in the days I was raising my children, we had a home phone, and I taught them how to make phone calls and how to answer the telephone and keep messages and, you know, clean up the house and various things actually, now my children are 45 and 38 and 28, and I see how wonderful those lessons were for them. They feel quite competent in their adult lives.
They really do, and it even starts before that, so that I heard a story from one mother who said that her teenage daughter was very difficult and, like many adolescents, was picking a fight with her mother and complaining that she was working, etc. And then when she went off to college, she called her mother up and she was talking about her roommate, and she said, "You wouldn't believe, my roommate knows how to do nothing. You know, I can make my bed, do my laundry, I can go register for my classes and buy my books, I can walk across campus and get where I need to go." And she said her roommate, who had a stay-at-home mother who was, I guess, the early version of a helicopter parent, she couldn't do any of those things, and she was totally lost. So I think that we launch our children well because they have some good skills.
Right. You know, as I was raising my children, my son had a good friend, and I became friendly with his mother, and she was a stay-at-home mother, and she watched the fact that I got my kids to do so much, and she started asking her oldest child to start doing some things, and his reaction was that she had it in for him. She was mad at him for some reason, until she explained to him that she realized he would need some skills as he grew up, and she was trying to help him develop those skills, and then he was fine. So it's all in that brings up a quote from you: "Normal is in the eye of the beholder." A lot of times, I guess the 60%, the people who think that children are better off if they have a stay-at-home mother, that's maybe what was normal for them or what they perceive as normal. Therefore, a working mother is not normal. Is that so?
Well, I think every family is different and every situation is different. And so there were a number of situations where it was the father who actually got home earlier because he worked closer to the home or he had a job that got out earlier. And so I heard a number of situations where the father was the cook. And you may not think that's traditional, but it was very normal for that family. And so I think that we need to let every family decide what works for their situation, especially when they're two working parents.
You know, when I was growing up, I was removed from the home of my birth mother when I was three. And my father won custody of me and my sister, two little girls, in 1946 as a single father. So he braided hair and he cooked and he ironed little dresses and so forth. And I was proud of him. And I told some people about it. And my father came to me and said, don't talk about these things, you know, because in those days for him to do something like that was seen as a demotion. Yesterday, I was talking with my 38-year-old son, and he said, Mom, it's really interesting how many more fathers there are at daytime school meetings and projects. He is now being a stay-at-home father. He's doing some things on the side, but he's taking care of his little daughters. And he said he thought maybe 30% of the people in daytime PTA or parent work at the school were men.
Well, I think a lot of that is not just the fathers who are staying at home, but because people are working themselves from home and have more flexible hours. So, for example, my stepdaughter is a teacher, and it's very hard for her to leave her own classroom to go to her kids' events. So her husband, who is selling software from a home office, he can schedule his conference calls and his meetings with more flexibility than she can. So he's often the parent who shows up. So she said that she at first resented that he got to do all the fun things, but she said now she really appreciates the flexibility he has.
Uh-huh. Well, you talk about how some of the child care arrangements are tag team, which that sounds a little bit like, you know, you take the children until 2 in the afternoon and then you can go to work and I'll be there sort of arrangement.
That's true. I mean, I think this is something that's been going on for a long time for families who've worked in factories. So I think we all know people who have worked in factories where one person takes the early shift and one person takes the late shift. But this also works out in professional services and other industries where people are consultants or people are independently employed the way you might have been, and they range the schedule so that the mother does the early shift and the father does the late shift, et cetera. So people are tag-teaming the child care arrangements to try and minimize the amount of money, frankly, that they have to spend on child care, which is very expensive.
Right. When my son was born, I made more money than his father did, and his father was very interested in caring for him. So I went back to work, and his father stayed home and took care of him. Now, one of the issues that came up, which I found kind of funny, really, because as I was growing up, people kept talking about how attached children were to their mothers, and like in custody cases, children were awarded to the mother because they're so attached. But since my husband started working with our child from his earliest days, and he was primarily at home through the first 2.5 years of his life, my son was really more attached. Like when he got hurt or something, he went to his father instead of his mother. And I found that it required me to make some adjustment in my own mind to recognize that it wasn't that the child loved his father more than me. It was what he was used to.
Right. I think we need to be flexible that you want your child to love both his or her parents. So I think we should welcome the father's involvement and not try to think that we own those rights of being the primary parent. I mean, I've heard of a number of situations where the father has more flexible schedule or even has chosen to stay at home with the child, and we should be okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of refreshing. I'm in my 70s now, and I've been there since the 50s and watched this transition. It's really amazing, and I really appreciate that the work you have done and talked about in your book, My Mother, My Mentor, really shows that if I, for example, thought that a mother staying at home was normal, that actually whatever the family works out is what's normal, and it works all right for the children. So we're up to our first break. My guest today is the author of My Mother, My Mentor, Pamela Linehan. And working mothers often feel guilty because they work. So we'll be finding out about working mothers and guilt when we return here on Full Power Living.
Have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. First, go now to emotionalpro.com, which is our Emotional Pro homepage, and get your copy of my free list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions. They will immediately help you move toward mastery over the emotions that come up in your life, and you'll have no idea how much calmer and less stressed you will be when your emotions are mastered. And while you're there, please sign up to be on our mailing list so we can send you our biweekly newsletter telling you about our programs. Next week, for example, Gabrielle Taylor, who is the author of Legacy of Wisdom, is going to be talking about another aspect of families, which is about family tradition and education and values as it's passed down from one generation to the next. So be here at 9 a.m. Pacific time, which is noon Eastern time, next Thursday. I also want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through understanding the importance, mastery, and power of human emotions. Emotions are part of everything, so they allow us to explore many frontiers of change and transformation that are now occurring. And I want to thank you for coming along with me on this exciting investigation. It's wonderful that as a group, we human beings are slowly becoming more emotionally balanced. So today I'm talking with Pamela Linehan. She's the author of My Mother, My Mentor. And day before yesterday, I wanted to tell you this. I was speaking with a woman who had 3 children, and I was talking with her in her work environment, and she told me that she went to work when her first child was born, when that child was 3 months old, and she did the same thing when the second child was 3 months old. And what happened for her was that she realized she missed the first word, the first step. She missed a lot of things. So when the third child came along, she took 4 years off and enjoyed all of those things. Have you heard from mothers that they felt like they missed out on important things?
I have heard from especially new mothers who feel like they are missing out on that first step or that first word. And yet it was interesting because it was in a conversation with other mothers, and one of the other more experienced mothers stepped up and she said, yes, but it'll be the first step for you and the first word for you. And so I think that's what we really need to realize is our children, you can stay at home and you can spend all of your time with your children, and you could be out doing grocery shopping if your child's with a sitter or with your mother, and that's when the child takes a step or says the first word. So you can't just really hang around necessarily and expect to pick up on all of these different milestones. You're still the mother. You're still going to see all these things. You know, they know who their parents are. So I would not feel left out.
You know, I used to work with children who actually had been removed from their parents because the parents had usually drug issues. And the one thing that I really, really learned, that was my first job out of my master's degree, what I really, really learned was that no matter how birth parents had behaved with their children, the children were still totally loyal to them. And I found that a really important lesson. And that sounds like what you're saying there, too. They're not going to forget who you are.
No, well, my children had babysitters from the time they were born. I mean, I took off time, of course, but we're talking months, not years. And my children knew that I was the mother, and we had very strong bonds. So it's great if they have other caretakers that they like being with. That's wonderful. But that doesn't mean that they don't love you, too.
Right. And the fact that they feel comfortable is influenced by how comfortable you are as a mother, I think. And along with that, I think because we miss out, we possibly think that our children are also feeling like they're missing out. And that's where the whole idea of guilt comes from. Would you agree with that or not?
Well, I think that we want everything to be perfect. Usually mothers would like everything to be perfect at home, and they'd like everything to be perfect at work. And the fact is, not every day is going to be perfect, whether you stay at home or not. So I think that we do tend then to look around for, oh, gee, why are things going wrong? And the easiest thing to blame is, well, it's because I'm working. But in fact, some of those things may have gone wrong if you were staying at home, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, my learning about guilt is that guilt is a form of anger, and it occurs when you feel like you're losing no matter what you do. You know, if I stay home, then I don't get to further my career. If I don't stay home, then I don't get to see those first steps. And, you know, as a therapist, I've learned if you can just acknowledge that anger and say it out loud, that it usually disappears. I personally don't believe in doing guilt. I don't do guilt because it doesn't help anybody.
You know? Well, I think this is where mothers really need mentors. And I really recommend that mothers find a person who has been through this ahead of her, and that they can really talk to about some of these problems and realize that these are not unique problems, that you can feel frustrated sometimes, you can have issues with childcare sometimes, and it does get better. So sometimes working mothers just need a sounding board, and I'd really recommend mothers who have more experience out there to try to be that sounding board for other women who are coming up and facing some of those issues that she's already conquered.
Oh, that's a great idea. I note that sometimes working mothers feel guilty about putting their child into childcare, and I love that in My Mother, My Mentor, you talk about childcare, approaching it as if it's the proverbial village that it takes to raise a child. Tell me more about what you learned about childcare and its influence on those grown children.
Well, I interviewed children who had all types of childcare. They went to somebody else's home. They had babysitters in their home. They went to professional childcare facilities, and all of them loved their childcare. So they really like getting out, and they like seeing other people. They like seeing other kids. And to them, this was really a great experience. So I think that as long as it's high-quality childcare, that is important. Your child needs to be safe, and you need to be comfortable that your child's being taken care of when you're at work. But if it is high-quality childcare, your child is really going to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's interesting. I started graduate school when my daughter was about 11 months old, and I actually didn't start graduate school, but I had a year to finish. And the first child care I found for her, she cried when she went there, and I knew it wasn't right for her. So I looked around, and I found another child care person, moved her almost immediately, and she absolutely loved it there. And it drew my attention to the fact that children actually have a tendency to create their own child care. They sort of know what they need, you know. And if you listen to them and respond, you know, like I listened to my daughter's distress at being where she was, then it flows very smoothly. So
it does. There's one family where there were three daughters, and they all went to the same child care provider who provided in-home care, not at the provider's care. And so the children all just loved her, and this woman, whose name was Judy, is still part of their lives today. So these daughters are all in their 20s, and they still go see Judy because they really care for this woman.
Oh, that's so nice. Now, let's talk about that, the longstanding issue of helping children with their homework, because I was surprised as I was reading My Mother, My Mentor, that generally speaking, the grades of children whose mothers worked were about as good as those of children whose mothers didn't work, although I note that boys whose mothers worked didn't do quite as well academically as the boys whose mothers did not work.
Well, one thing that surprised me is that for all children, and this is self-reported, so these are children reporting generally good grades, and for all children, whether the mother worked or not, there were higher percentages in elementary than in middle, and in middle than in high school. And I did a little research, and if you're an academic, you may already know this, I didn't, is that apparently children's grades drop from elementary, where they have a teacher in the room focused on them all the time, to middle school, where they're adolescents and rebelling a little, to high school, where they where they're more independent and teachers expect more of them. And so the grades of the children whose parents worked dropped a little bit sooner than the grades of the children whose mothers stayed at home. But the other thing that could offset that is that the children whose mothers worked were more after-school activities and in sports. So it could be that the parents were, they didn't have as much time for the homework, or the parents were looking at the whole picture. And yet, I think the final report card, as I call it, they still went to college at the same rate. And so the fact of the matter is, whatever the grades were, they were good enough to get them into schools and to be successful in life.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I have an adult daughter who has three children, two of whom are in college now. And the middle one became a National Merit Scholar and got a four-year full-ride scholarship to the University of Texas in Dallas. The working, both of those parents now were very involved in raising the children and read to them a lot and did many things together that would foster that kind of development. But overall, that issue that we talked about before, where the children were given responsibility in the family and for themselves, that was done quite deliberately. And it turns out now, even as the children have gone to college, they are still being self-sufficient, whereas many of the other students around them, equally intelligent, are not as prepared to go out on their own.
Well, I think that's what we were talking about before, how I've heard that from other mothers as well, is that you don't really think you're preparing your kids for being more independent at college or having a good start to their workplace. You're just having your kids manage the day-to-day. But the fact is, you provide this great example, and you ask more of your children because you don't have as many hours to do the chores or whatever that you need to do. And so these kids end up learning a lot from you just by osmosis and by watching you.
Mm-hmm. So you say, whether it has to do with the development of friendships or the way our child performs in school or even being bullied, a quote that you have in your book is, you need to be there, but you don't need to be there all the time. Will you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I just like quickly address the bullying. One statistic that surprised me, but maybe it shouldn't, is that the children reported both being bullied and learning disabilities at the same rate, whether the mother worked or not. And I think that's, I guess, as I think about it, the mother is not in school no matter whether she works or not, and therefore you really can't protect your child all the time no matter what you do. But the fact is that these children are, did perform well and are very independent, but they want you to come to things that are special, whether that's the school play or the big game or the ballet recital. So they know that you can't be there for necessarily every little school picnic, but they want you there for the important things, and you have to ask your kids what those are.
So I really loved your chapter on family time, because you talk in there, there are like two things that really stand out with the grown children that are really important in terms of family time. As I understand them, those are eating meals together and vacations.
They are. And eating meals together doesn't necessarily mean you have to sit down at the table every night together, but it does mean, whether it's once a week or even more often, to really make time as a family and put away those electronic devices and turn off the television set and sit down and talk to each other. And one family that was a blended family made a real effort to be sure that all of the kids from both sides of the family were there on one night during the week, and the parents made them say what were the best things in their week and the worst things in their week. And they said that they thought that this was all, really just, very strange that their parents were doing this. But now that they're grown up, they really like it, and they really remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And vacations, the key thing was to just get away, because when mothers are at home on nights and weekends, we're generally running errands or paying bills or putting away the laundry, et cetera, and the kids don't get the focus. But as one mother said, when she was away on vacation, she got to watch her children play, and she got to focus on them. There were no other chores she had to do.
Yes, that's really great. I was a single parent for 20 years, and I really felt overwhelmed at times. And I had the good fortune of a friend who was a psychic medium who helped me. And I went to her one time and said, I just don't have enough time in the day. And she suggested that I was putting too much energy into making meals. And my son was 5 at the time and my daughter was 12. She suggested that I help the children plan meals, go and shop with me for the meals, and make the meals and serve them, and then clean up, each of them doing that. And I, my son was 5. What could he do? He turned out he could bake potatoes in the microwave and put grated cheese on them, which is a meal. But I offered to my children whether they'd like to try that out, and they said yes. And within a couple of years, what was so wonderful for me is I could sit in the living room and read the paper while the dinner was being made. Plus, my children learned. Like, I remember one night my daughter turned her nose up at something my son had made, and he just looked at her and said, "That really hurts my feelings. I worked hard." And it was a lot of learning that went on with it, too. So asking our children to participate in the family meals, whether they're helping to set the table or they're making the whole meal, that's really valuable, I think.
Right. I don't think as mothers, no matter where you work, we should be slaves for our children. And you want to get them involved. And I think also some mother pointed out that when you have your kids helping you, whether they're chopping things or they're setting the table or they're stirring, they're actually more likely to talk to you about the things going on in their day. You're not sitting down and having that big, important conversation. It's just casual conversation, and they might start talking about some things you really would like to hear about.
Yes. Yeah, it was really, really wonderful to have those meals. I had them when I was growing up, so I valued them, and I'm kind of tickled that to see that that is a lasting thing, and it's not really that hard as a working parent, especially these days. You can pick up food on your way home from work. You don't have to actually make it all the time. So,
yes, I love all these prepared foods we have in our grocery stores. I'm a big believer in those.
We don't even have to tear our own lettuce anymore. All right, so we're up to our second break. I'm talking today with Pamela Linehan about what she learned from the grown children of mothers who worked, about the effects of having a working mother on their childhood and their adult lives. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
parent your child if he or she were a foreign exchange student? As a host for an exchange student, you'd have five main jobs to do. Those are the same five jobs important in raising kids. People around the world have used this approach to raise kids who are self-directed, make great decisions, and are immune to peer pressure. Get your copy of the Exchange Student Model for Parenting written by me, Eileen Dillon, now available on Kindle. As a 41-year marriage and family therapist, a single, married, step, adoptive, and grandmother, I've got a thing or two to tell you that's going to lighten your load as a parent and help you create incredible kids who will become amazing adults. Go to Kindle.com and download the Exchange Student Model for Parenting today. In case you're just joining us here on Full Power Living, I'm talking today with Pamela Linehan, who was one of the first female partners on Wall Street, and she conducted a study of the effects on grown children of being raised by a working mom, which she now has reported in her book, My Mother, My Mentor. Now, Pamela, I note your book was published in 2015, so it's not been out very long, but have you had an opportunity to have in-person talks with people, with mothers, working mothers who've read your book? And if so, what kinds of responses have you received?
Well, I'm getting positive responses because I think that there seem to be two groups who are interested in it. They are women of my generation who've raised their kids and are looking to see, okay, how did my kid turn out compared to everyone else? And then there are younger mothers who have who are struggling with some of these issues and with the guilt that we talked about before, and they're really looking for some answers. So to give you an example, last night I was with about 30 working mothers, and this was mostly a younger crowd, and one woman said, I know that you say that you're supposed to have alone time with each of your children because children want to be seen as individuals, but I have a 5- and a 7-year-old daughter, and I just don't have that much time, so what can I do? And another mother jumped up, and I gave her some ideas. Another mother jumped up. She said, can I give you my idea? And I said, please. And so she said that she has 3 children and who are 6, 4, and 1. And the 6-year-old was doing the same thing, complaining that she needed more time. So they put the 2 younger ones to bed, and then they take out an egg timer and a kitchen timer and just put it on 15 minutes, and the 6-year-old gets 15 minutes of alone time with whichever parent is there that evening or has time to spend with her. And she gets to pick. It could be she's trying Batman moves, and they weren't quite sure what that was, or she might want to have a special book read to her, or she might want to do somersaults, but whatever she wants to do during those 15 minutes, that's what she does.
Oh, that's so wonderful. You bring to mind that when my daughter was 6, she complained that she didn't get enough of me. So I took a week, and she and I went backpacking in Northern California in the wilderness, and we spent the entire week together. We slept in the tent, we made our meals together, we hiked during the daytime, we played cards, and as we were walking out of the woods to go home, I turned to her and I said, well, did you get enough of mommy this week? And she said, almost, but not quite.
That's wonderful. Well, I had a time when my daughter was taking riding lessons, and they were pretty far from our house, so there was a lot of driving back and forth, and I was a single parent as well for a number of years, so my son had to come with us, and I felt badly about this, but after 1 week of this, I found a diner that was nearby, and it may not have been gourmet food, but it was fun, and so he and I would go there every Saturday and have a hamburger, and during the nice weather, sit out at a picnic table and have some ice cream, and so we turned what was driving her back and forth to her riding lesson to a day that my son and I had a private lunch together. So you just have to use these opportunities to be with your kids.
Mm-hmm. And you, there are several things. I know you have a list from of working mothers of 10 things in the back of your book, My Mother, My Mentor. But you talk about carving out time to spend with your child, which we've talked about, but you also say listen to your children and know what's going on. Be there when they need you, even if it's just by phone. So you don't actually have to be there in person. They just need to know your attention is on them. Is that correct?
Right. I mean, the things that you want to do in person. And so, as one of the daughters says, as long as you're there for the prom dress shopping, for explaining puberty, for explaining how to ask a guy out, that those things you might want to do in person, but there are a lot of things that you can just do by phone. And if you're a working mother, sometimes that's all they really need from you, is they need that quick answer or that piece of advice.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a cartoon in my local paper that is currently featuring a woman who keeps trying to leave her children with their grandparents, and the grandparents hide out and try not to take care of the children. But in your book, you say that grandparents are often mentioned as mentors by the grown children. So you recommend that parents help their children to spend time with their grandparents.
That's true. Asked in the survey about adults who had a positive influence on you other than your parents, and number one are teachers, which we can talk about, but number two on the list was grandmothers. And when I interviewed the children, a lot of these grandmothers were not high-power executives. They were stay-at-home moms and were just wonderful people. So the role that grandparents play is to make children feel loved. And especially for the daughters of working mothers, they also give them confidence. And it should be noted that the AARP tells us that only 16% of grandparents provide regular child care. So these weren't child care grandparents. These are just regular grandparents that they would see on weekends or sometimes during the week.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I started with my grandchildren a little over a year ago is that I go on to Skype and read to them once a week. And that's been a lot of fun.
Oh, that's really wonderful. We've heard stories of grandparents, you know, taking children out for individual trips, or when I've been traveling, I've met grandparents who, when a child reaches 12 or 13, each grandchild gets their own little vacation. So kind of what you were doing with your daughter, they're doing with their grandchildren.
Actually, in 2014, I took my 8-year-old granddaughter to Ireland with me to a parenting conference, and as things worked out, she gave a speech at the parenting conference also, and we had a great time together.
Well, she's a lucky girl.
I was lucky to have her. So what about teachers? What did you find out about the effect of teachers on children?
Well, teachers have a tremendous impact on children, and especially on the daughters of working mothers, because most of them are working mothers themselves. And so teachers taught them skills, they gave them confidence, they broadened their perspective. So I think that we, as parents, think that we're the most important person in our children's lives, and we are. But I think what we forget is there is this wonderful village of teachers, of grandparents, of coaches, and family friends who really surround these children, and they learn a lot from all of these adults.
Right. You know, when my son was almost 14, he was supposed to help me cut a tree down for an aging neighbor, and he didn't show up. And a couple hours later, he came back and he said, "Mom, you know, I've been needing a mentor, and I found him this evening." And he found this astrophysicist who lived two or three doors from us and asked him to be his mentor. And that man was really wonderful. He spent time with my son. He sent him money when he was in college. He gave him advice, and it really did help him to grow up. But my son was wise enough to find him for himself. But mentoring really is important, and you say that sometimes, very frequently, the working mother themselves becomes a mentor, especially in issues of working and doing jobs.
Yes, that's where working mothers really shine. And you would think that fathers would take up this role as well. And I don't have all these statistics in the book because there are just only so much you can do. But I did have this survey, and the fathers don't pick up that role. It's the working mother who helps the child figure out what he or she wants to do, write a resume, to craft that story when you go on interviews, to get the right clothes, and then as they start work, to really help them. Now, a lot of the parents, I think most of the parents, had different jobs than their children ended up choosing. But a lot of issues in the workplace are about people, and women are very good at that. And so they were able to help their children get involved and figure out how to deal with some of the interpersonal issues at work.
Yeah, that really stood out to me as I was reading your book, is that the mothers were helpful because they knew a lot about relationships, and that's what they were really teaching their children, how to conduct almost like different levels of relationship and how to operate in the world. And that did surprise me, because I would have thought that was would be a male job, you know, a father's job. I did both. You probably did also as a single parent. And one of the things that you point out in the book that has happened for me too is my children still come to me for advice on their jobs.
Well, my children talk to me about exactly the interpersonal issues. And so it is about team dynamics. It's about how you deal with bosses. One woman I thought had just a wonderful story in the book, that her mother had been in banking and she was in the hospitality industry. And so when this woman went to interview for a job she really wanted, she didn't get it because she flubbed one of the questions. And she said to her mother, she went back and said to her mother, you know, they asked me, is the customer always right? And I didn't quite know how to answer it, and what should I do? And her mother said, well, what you should be saying is that, no, the customer isn't always right, but we always do the best job we can. And so she said that it's such a great question, now she uses it now that she's a manager and interviewing people. So I think it's, even though they're in very different industries, there are a lot of, we all are in dealing with people in whatever jobs we're in, and mothers were very good at preparing their children for that.
Mm-hmm. Mothers had quite a lot of influence in sports too, and I had to chuckle because I certainly understand the issue. You pointed out that a lot of middle school children were involved in sports as a way for them to be cared for while they still thought they were operating independently.
Yes, you know, you have those hours that are difficult for parents after the children get out of school, before you get home from work. And what do you do with the children? You really don't want them coming home to an empty house. So the working mothers made a big effort to get their children involved in sports and other after-school activities. And I thought it was very funny when I interviewed the children that they explained to me with great seriousness that they were in charge of their afternoons, that they set up their schedules, that they were very independent. And yet when you talk to the mother would say, I had them involved in sports and signed up for activities and for camps because I wanted them looked over by another adult. And so it was a great solution. The kids thought they were in charge, and the mother knew that there was a caring adult teaching his or her child skills.
Mm-hmm. That's really great. And both the mothers and the children seem to value the lessons that they learned in sports, like around teamwork or applying yourself to a task or doing your best, that was an added benefit.
Well, a lot of mothers consciously thought about it. Some did, some didn't. But there were mothers who had been athletes themselves, and they wanted their children both involved in individual sports, but maybe more importantly in team sports, because you can't play team sports unless people show up. And I heard stories about mothers where their child wanted to drop out in the middle of a season, and the mother said, no, in our family, we always finish whatever we start. And so there were these very simple lessons that then they were able to take into the workplace. They knew how to work with teams. And the other thing is they knew how to experience failure. You know, when you play a game, one team loses. And so they were able to realize that, okay, I lost this one, but I'm going to work on winning the other one next week.
And I also loved how working moms called on their own social or business networks to help their children as they moved into the workforce. They seemed to be great at coaching. You know, we talked about teaching them about relationships, but they also coached them on the steps of moving into adult life.
Right. And as I said, a lot of the parents did not have the same careers that their children were interested in. But we women are very good at connections. And so we often know somebody in that field. So I know when my daughter was thinking about becoming a lawyer, I had her meet with another friend of mine who was a lawyer, and she decided she didn't want to go there. When she was thinking that she didn't need to go to business school, I thought she did. I had her meet with a couple friends of mine who, you know, convinced her that, yes, this really was a good long-term investment of her time. So I think that we need to use our networks to introduce our child to other people's opinion, even though you may think they should listen to you. They actually like getting advice from others as well.
You remind me once when my son was in middle school, he came to me three different times during the week and gave me an idea of some plan he wanted to follow, something that he wanted to do. And he asked me my opinion, and each time I said to him, I don't think it's a good idea. Here's how I think it will work out. And he went ahead and did what he wanted to do anyway, and it worked out as I had predicted. And by the time we got to the third one, he came to me and said, I don't know why I don't listen to you. You're always right.
Well, there was one mother who said that she had a very difficult son during adolescence, and no matter what she or husband said, he disagreed with it. But he had a teacher who would say exactly the same thing, and somehow that teacher was able to get through when the parents weren't.
Wow. Back to the power of those teachers. How wonderful. Well, it's nice because what you open up here in your work and your study is that we really are all operating as a village to raise our children. And, you know, whether we're in childcare or we're in business or we're working to support our families or we're teaching or coaching, we're all helping the next generations to come into the world and set themselves up for good lives.
Yes, and let's not forget about the mothers, too. The mothers need some mentors.
Yes, I like that point. You've made that. I wish you had talked to me years ago. I could have used that.
I could have used it, too.
My last birthday was on Thanksgiving Day, and I was surprised as I was reading your book that your study showed that Thanksgiving was actually the favorite holiday of a lot of grown children of working moms.
It was. It surprised me, too, because I thought, okay, kids like presents, so it's got to be Christmas. But it wasn't. A lot of families stay home in their own homes at Christmas because they want Santa Claus to be there and they don't want to travel. And so by nature, that means they're smaller gatherings. Whereas the children loved the big gatherings. They really love being part of something bigger. They like seeing the aunts and the uncles and the cousins and the grandparents. So I think Thanksgiving was just a fun time. And for mothers, it was a little bit more relaxed because you didn't have to worry about all those presents.
Yes, and the one thing that I was sad about as I was reading that was how stores, large stores, are now opening their doors on Thanksgiving Day and ruining that holiday for a family time for a lot of people. And so I hope that word goes out. Stop doing that. So, Pamela, it's time for us to stop. And I just want to say that I know your study and your book, My Mother, My Mentor, has already brought a lot of comfort to working mothers. And we all have an interest in whether we're doing right by our children and if we're giving them enough. And your study and your book are comforting because you've demonstrated that we don't have to be all things. We don't have to turn ourselves inside out to parent for a good result in our children's adult lives. And so I really want to thank you for doing this groundbreaking work. And thank you also. It's been my pleasure to have you here on Full Power Living today.
Well, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Remember, next Thursday, Gabrielle Taylor widens our understanding of the effects of family and family members when she talks with me on legacy of wisdom, wise things handed down to her from her own grandmother. So that's next week, 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific time. Tell your friends and family. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media is our producer. Thank you, Paul. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
Hope Hour Living with Eileen Dillon.
That's what my unpredictable hair sounded like before Frizzies. Sound familiar? We'll stop the crunchiness and celebrate your curls with Frizz-Ease Air Dry Waves. It gives you defined, touchable waves with soft, feather-like movement. No heat required and no frizz. And that's the sound you'll hear and feel with your defined, touchable waves from Frizz-Ease. Frizz-Ease Air Dry Waves, only from John Frieda.